It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
Hour number three of Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. Bob McCowan, Ken Reid in our Toronto studios for this Thursday, the 20th of November. Don Banks of Sports Illustrated will join us in a little bit. Some NFL talk coming up as the Thursday nighter goes. Bit of a yawn.
Raiders.
Kansas City's a decent team, but I don't know if they're interesting enough to keep my attention. We'll find out.
Until they're up by 24 after the first quarter.
And discussion about the possibility of either moving the Buffalo game back a day or even moving it to another site.
Because we know they're not playing on Sunday in Buffalo.
That's been determined, I think. That much we know for sure.
Still a bit of snow in Buffalo.
So we'll get to that in just a few minutes with Mr. Banks. But first, an hour after we were introduced to Russell Martin as the new Blue Jays catcher officially in studio, Alex Anthopoulos, the managing general of the Toronto Blue Jays, joins us on the line. Mr. Anthopoulos, Tikanis.
Kala, doing well. Long day, but this is the last one of the day.
What conversation, interview you have to do? Obligation that you have?
I'm not rolling my eyes. I'm not whining. Not complaining. Glad to do it. Actually, it was an honor to get the invite to come on today. I wasn't sure.
Oh, please.
If it's your last one.
In the trash can now.
Yeah, if it's your last one, Alex, just go autopilot with Bob. Just mail this
just
one in.
Just go rogue. Just go nuts.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Spill the beans.
Yeah.
So here's where I'd like to take this, at least it's until Kenny hijacks the interview and takes it in a completely different direction.
That's what I do.
So, take me through the process of getting ready for this off season. I'm envisioning, and I think fans at home are envisioning, a whiteboard somewhere, either in your office or somewhere around, and you got a list of that. You've gone through the list of free agents that are out there. You've talked to various teams about possibilities of trades down the road. So you got some maybe names over there. How many names would be on that board that you would have any free agent names that you would say, well, we might have interest in these guys? Would it be one or two? Is it a dozen? How many?
There's a lot that goes into off-season planning. You know, in my office throughout the year, I have 2 years of free agents, basically on a, I have magnetic paint basically all over the office, and I have magnets all over the place, and I put 2 years worth because you like to see what the current free agent class is going to be, and you want to forecast a year ahead of time.
Sure.
So it can impact some of your decision making. And then what we'll do is, as we get towards the off season, we will go through and we'll have projected non-tenders, so guys that are going to be eligible for arbitration that we think might get too expensive for some clubs, and maybe borderline guys, they're not sure if they're going to bring them back, non-tender them, make them free agents, or if we think they're, there's a debate there that would make them potentially available in trade. And that's why we add them to the list of free agents, but I'll change the color on those guys. And then we will we'll have all the guys that have options and so on, and those guys will be mixed in. And then we'll rank them. We'll rank every single free agent that is out there, even though we might not have interest in a bunch of guys, just to familiarize yourself. And we'll also go through clubs and try to find out who has needs. And, you know, you're looking at, when we looked at the catcher market, we thought potentially five or six clubs would have needs, and we felt Martin was maybe one of the only guys that would be sought after, and we weren't very optimistic that we could get him. But you know, that's basically a big part of it. We can go on for a while, but that's the gist of how it starts.
So would you categorize Russell Martin as a high priority for you as you went into this process?
So what we did was in the offseason, we went out to the Arizona Fall League, and we had some of our staff come out and wanted to see Sean Nolan, Dalton Pompey, and Osuna. And at the same time, we had some meetings. And like you said, there's whiteboards and some film and video. And we go through all the free agents and we actually go around the room a little bit and talk about what we feel our priorities should be. And we all know what the holes are on the team, but
yeah.
I'd like to get everyone's insight into how would they prioritize needs by position. So, you know, some guys might say we need to address the bullpen first. Another one might say we need to address left field or DH. Someone might say we need a frontline starter. And basically I'll have them come up with an order, 1 through 5 or 6 or whatever it might be. And do that, and then afterwards, I'll say, okay, we know all the free agents. We've gone through them. We've ranked them. We know who could be available in trade. We've spent the month of October calling teams and getting a sense of who might have interest and who could be available. You know, which players, forget the order of the positional priorities and needs, which players would you prioritize? And I'll go around the room and I'll ask that. So catcher was not a position, but Martin was, and that's the discrepancy there. It's rare you get an opportunity to get a player like this, and even though we didn't feel the need to upgrade at that position, getting this player, him becoming a free agent, being available, thinking we had a chance at him, you know, that put him high on the priority list, but it was only him, not that position.
Which raises a whole bunch of different questions. You project to have several, maybe as many as 3 very young pitchers in your starting rotation next year, depending upon how things fall. Having a guy that's as good defensively, as good at handling pitchers, and has leadership skills, was that a factor in this decision? In other words, if you'd had a different structure with your pitching staff, might you have been less interested in Russell Martin?
I'd say perhaps. It was definitely part of it. It's something that we talked about. We talked about the guys you talked, you know, Sanchez, Drew Hutchinson, Stroman, and beyond those guys, Daniel Norris, we're very excited about.
Right.
Miguel Castro, who's not really a name in terms of the prospect list, but we think he's right there with Norris and those guys. We're going to bring him to spring training. I think everyone will get a chance to see how good he is, and still have guys like Nolan, and we love Osuna, who's only 19. And the 9th pick overall for us was Jeff Hoffman, that was arguably going to be a top 3 pick, should be back from Tommy John in May. He's already throwing, but he's a college guy that can come quick with tremendous stuff. So to have those guys and know that they're going to be part of the organization for a long time, and then knowing that Navarro is a year away from free agency and also trying to look out a year, the free agent market behind the plate a year from now is not strong in our minds. It all weighs into the equation. But obviously Martin's he's a great bat as well, and he does all the things that we want. He'll get on base. I think one of only 4 guys to be over 400, use the whole field, make contact, which I think is becoming more and more important. All those things, great athlete, high energy guy, which I think is extremely important as well. Just a rare combination at a rare time, and we didn't want to lose the opportunity to go after him.
So, Alex, here we are at this point. You have Russell Martin signed up, and you mentioned Navarro there. What do you do with DeHonor? Do you try to make it work for him because he has a free agent coming up after this season?
Yeah, and I'm definitely sensitive to that. I mean, it was a good marriage last year. We gave him an opportunity to play every day, and he definitely rewarded the confidence we had in him and had a great year. And, you know, you talk about a guy who's been good with the staff, and again, that's not, you know, again, signing a guy like Martin, he's just one of the best at his position, and we think the owner did a good job. Burley had his, you know, as strong a year as he's had in a long time, and we all know he does not shake, and DeHonor was a huge part of that. Stroman pitched incredibly well. Jay Happ's second half of the season really came on, but DeHonor was a big part of that, and he swung the bat well, had a lot of big hits for us, and did a lot of good things. So, you know, from that standpoint, he does deserve to play every day. He does deserve to catch every day. So I told him right at the outset when I called him, if I can find a home for him that makes sense for us, we'll look to do it. If not, we're not just going to give him away, but if we can't find a deal that makes sense for us, then we have that DH spot open, and that's why it was so important to move Lind early, because we didn't know what was ultimately going to happen, whether it was going after a Martinez or going after a Martin. You just don't know who you're going to get in free agency, and we didn't want to get stuck with having to try to sign a free agent, but also then have to move a Lind, and you know, maybe the Brewers weren't interested because they went out and signed some other player or traded for somebody else. So he understands. He said, look, I'll be ready to go in spring training. I'm preparing to come and be a Blue Jay, but at the same time, you know, yeah, of course I want to play every day, and I told him I understand that, and we'll just see where it goes.
With Alex Anthopoulos, I asked Russell when he was in studio if he'd caught a knuckleball before, and he basically said no. He did have a knuckleball. One guy who was up for a cup of coffee when he was with the Dodgers, but principally said I didn't really have a whole lot of experience. Would it be your preference that Russell Martin catches every day? Let me start with that question. I have a follow-up to that.
Yeah, sure. It certainly would. And, you know, we talked to him about being open to catch RA. And I know in talking to RA in the past, he said, look, a lot of guys can do it, but the big part of it is wanting to do it. And he, you know, he gave me some examples of two guys in his career that just, from a mental standpoint, it's tough. It's not easy. You have to adjust. New glove. I remember when Henry Blanco was here, he just talked about you need to be a little bit more open with your stance, pretty much meaning you got to be a little more tilted sideways and a bit of a shift to do that. And it's not easy at all, but in talking to Russ, he's the type of guy that he loves a challenge, and he prides himself. And I mean, he's a very confident guy, believes in himself, and he's got such good hands. I think what makes him so good at framing balls is the fact he's got those soft hands. And even if you ever get to see some highlights, it's that low strike, the way he just brings it back up in the zone, and the fact that he's so athletic as well. I think he'd have no problem being able to catch RA. He just would need the reps and the time.
Last week, for the first time, I sort of tried to make the point that you guys are playing almost, not quite with one hand tied behind your back, but with a disadvantage, with no disrespect intended to Toley, but here is a guy who doesn't give you enough offensively to be able to use him on any kind of regular basis, and so he becomes a real part-time player behind the plate. It essentially gives you a 24-man roster instead of a 25-man roster.
Yeah, I mean,
it's important, isn't it?
I mean, there's no doubt. You want to get better everywhere you can. I mean, Josh does. The tough part for Josh is if you look at his career when he played with the Mets and he was an everyday player, from an offensive standpoint, he was a lot better. He walked. He didn't strike out. And he's not ever going to have a lot of power, but he's the type of guy that can shoot the ball the other way, and he can get his OPS into the low 700s or mid-700s, but he needs the reps. And the tough part about being in the position he's in is, you know, he's there starting once every 5 days. Any position player will tell you it's hard to get in a groove at the plate when you're playing sporadically. And when you are in there, you probably put a lot more on yourself to try to perform. So it's not an easy task. And, you know, potentially, you know, if he had more playing time, you know, the offense would come around. It was a lot better this past year than it was the year prior. And I think he did get a chance to play a little bit more. But there's no doubt, just having the flexibility where you're not reliant on one guy to catch RA helps. And that certainly would open some things up, having a guy like Martin here.
Alex, the other thing we keep hearing about Russ Martin, aside from his great defense, is his leadership. He's a winner. He's been to the postseason in 7 of his 9 seasons. Was this a move to change the culture of this team and to show these guys, hey, this is what a winner acts like, and to get this guy in the clubhouse and to show that off?
I mean, that's part of it, but that wasn't the reason why. One, he's a great player. And we've had guys before that are great clubhouse guys and so on, but you know, it does start with being a productive player. And, you know, he's that rare player. He's at a premium position, great offensively, great defensively, in terms of makeup, being a leader. I mentioned this earlier today, he really doesn't have any holes to his game, and he takes care of himself as well. And players gravitate to him, and he can lead by example. And, you know, the other component, too, is you have a guy that wants to play in Canada, that's from Canada. And I'm not saying from a PR standpoint, but someone that's proud to be here and proud to play for this team and understands the importance. And there's a cultural component to that. I think a lot of our players that have gone on the winter tour realize it more and more, and maybe having more of an identity. But first and foremost, what he does on the field is the priority. Then when you start factoring in those other things, high energy, a leader, all those type of things, that just makes you want the player that much more.
The other thing I picked up on today at the presser, someone asked him about hitting in the number 2 spot, and he basically said, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, I don't care. Now, and to me, he wasn't just doing lip service. I thought that meant a lot. What did it mean to you to hear him say something like that? You know, I'll hit wherever, 1 through 9.
I'm not surprised. And I think it's important because even when we had talked to him, myself and Tony LaCava, when we first sat down and talked to him, we just talk baseball a little bit, and he just talked about things that he really enjoyed. I asked him, you know, who were some teammates that he liked, and, you know, what did being a good teammate mean, and some of the little things. And he talked about just, you know, the small things you can do to help your team win, whether it's getting into a rundown to allow the run to score from third, or just some of the small things. And you could really care. Winning's the number one priority. And even when we talked internally, how are we going to recruit this guy? And the more work that we did on him, it was, are we going to play the Canada angle? Is that going to be the real gist of the sales pitch, to be honest with you? And, you know, the more work we did on him was, sure, that's going to be a part of it, a small part of it, not to say he's not proud to be from Canada, but the overwhelming thing with this guy is going to be winning. And it's extremely important to him. And all the background that we did on him, that was going to be where we needed to focus our attention. That's where we needed to focus the conversation. And then you have the other components, family being able to come and see him, all those kind of things. Those, and of course, you need to have the contract as well. But you better come to the table convincing him that you're going to win and you have a chance to win, and he can help you do that. And that's probably the most encouraging thing more than anything else.
With Alex Anthopoulos, I know there's a lot of stuff you can't and won't tell us, but let me throw out a couple of things. You told somebody earlier today that you have no offers out there for free agents currently. Is that accurate?
That is correct.
Okay. Does that, however, mean that you have no interest in any of the free agents that are still out there?
That does not. I was, before I got on this call, I was on the phone with an agent just talking about, you know, the fit with Toronto and how sincere would the player be and all those type of things. And I had to run because I had to jump on the radio, and I said I would call him back. But I think it just points to the fact that normally when you get to the offer standpoint, you know, talks are advanced, and we're nowhere close to that. So I know there's a lot of rumors out there about us. We have interest in plenty of players, both in free agency and trade, but we're not anywhere close to anything at all.
What does the Russell Martin signing mean in those conversations? You've had at least one we know of, and I assume several, since the word got out that you'd signed him. How does that catapult conversations, if at all?
You know what? It's a great question, because it does. And I know when we met with Russ, it's one of the things I talked to him about, is would he be willing to sign early? You know, or does he need to go to the winter meetings? Does he need to do all these things?
Yeah.
Because I did think with some of the other plans and things we'd like to do, getting him on the board or getting him signed helps you. And I've seen it now, and I wasn't sure to the extent, but I've had some agents tell me that after signing him, they'd love to play with him. I think we've become a more desirable place to play. Now, that isn't going to mean that we're going to be able to spend less or, you know, get players for fewer years, but it opens the door to some players that maybe were undecided about Toronto. And I think it does push the needle a little bit more towards us now, adding a guy like that, because he's so well thought of around the game, he's so well liked as a teammate and all the other things he brings. And whether it's a reliever or a starter, I've had a lot of the agents tell me, you know, the Martin signing was a nice indicator. They'd love to throw to him. And it does kind of put us back on the map of, you know, being that serious about trying to win.
What about in terms of you always hear people talk about taxes in Canada. Well, you see a guy sign a big $82 million contract here. Does that open some eyes of some other players as well, just in terms of their bottom line?
I mean, I think it does. I think the tax issue with Canada, I mean, it came up in this negotiation, and we had a lot of our staff have to get involved. And, you know, it's something, though, that there's a perception out there that, you know, it's the most expensive place to play is in Toronto, and that's not the case. Only 40% of your income is taxed from a Canadian standpoint, because you do spend time in Florida. You only play 81 dates at home, and then you have a few off days, but you do spend a lot of time in the United States. So when we did a study years ago, I remember when J.P. Ricciardi was still here, we were trading for Troy Gloss, and we hired some of the big accounting firms, and we ultimately came out from a tax standpoint in the middle of the pack. But a lot of the agents still don't realize that, and that's something that we probably need to do a stronger job of, maybe educating some of the players and their agents that the perception that it's that much more expensive to play here is completely wrong.
Philosophically, we've had conversations before about the bullpen, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I always thought that you and I were sort of on the same page on this. Correct me if I'm wrong, that the notion of paying high-profile relievers, especially through free agency, is a highly risky and oftentimes unrewarding experience. Do you share that sentiment? And how do you build a bullpen, or what you need, what you still need to build, absent signing free agents?
I mean, there's no doubt. I think you're always there's so much volatility in the bullpen, and you know, most guys, free agency, like you said, an established guy, they become expensive, and you can certainly look at the last few free agent deals for some free agent closers and so on. And you know, I don't know that the return on the dollars committed have been all that rewarding for the club. So, you know, all that being said, especially there's so much of a focus on having a quote, established guy in the ninth inning. And I remember when we had traded for Sergio Santos, he had saved 30 games, and he had done it before. And
yep.
Jansen had not been given the opportunity, and ultimately he was right there under our noses. And really, we never develop closers in the minor leagues. I don't know too many clubs that have a closer prospect in waiting. All these guys start, and at some point,
yep.
they get converted. So I definitely am on the same page with it. It doesn't mean we wouldn't be aggressive or have interest in an established reliever, but you're right. Where you pause is the years and the dollars, because the volatility from year to year, and a lot of times it's three outs. There's a mental component, but sometimes you just need to give the guy an opportunity to do it.
Can let me ask this question. Can you go into this season without making an acquisition either at second base or third base?
Yes. Not ideal, but we can. Because we do think if we're good defensively and we've, you know, fill and shore up some of the other areas, we still can have a good offensive team. And look, we went into last year not having an established guy, and we still had to, you know, mix and match. But from an offensive standpoint, we were still in the top five. I think we were fourth in runs scored and OPS. So we still can have a strong lineup. And you really, as much as you'd like to fill every spot, you're looking at the collection 1 through 9 and what type of offense production are you going to get. So that being said, we'd like to do better. We'd like to have probability, stability, all those things at all the spots. But we can't force it because you never know when opportunities are going to present themselves.
Alex, I just going back to the bullpen, I just wanted to ask you, we saw what Kansas City did and the way they just kind of worked it until they got to the seventh inning out of their starters. Did that change your philosophy on the game at all? Because we hear talk now that people are kind of maybe relooking at what they want out of their starters and just get to that bullpen.
You know, I think more was made of it this past year, but you know, it seems like everybody forgot about when the Cardinals won the World Series, I think 2011, mm-hmm. and everyone was saying what a great job Tony La Russa did, and he'd pull his starter after five innings. So this isn't the first time. I remember years ago when the Angels won the World Series with K-Rod and Troy Percival, and they had an unbelievable bullpen as well. It just, again, maybe we just all forgot about it, but it's always been extremely important. You have more days off. You can get your bullpen the rest. When you get to the playoffs, I think a few things matter. Obviously, frontline starters are important. Having a great pen is important. And I think having contact bats are important because it does get cold. The conditions aren't ideal to hit. The guys that have a lot of swing and miss to their game, you're facing great bullpens and frontline guys, and you just need to put the ball in play and make the defense, you know, cause an error or bloopers and bleeders and things like that. So I think in the postseason, those things are very important.
With Alex Anthopoulos. You made the statement here, you have no offers out on free agents. One of those is your left fielder. Do you have an understanding that at some point in time you will readdress your situation with him?
Well, I guess I'd say for our own free agents, it doesn't mean we haven't had discussions and haven't made offers and received any type of counter. And I'm not trying to insinuate anything. I would just say we rarely, I don't know too often that I ever feel comfortable putting an offer out there and having it stay out there for weeks at a time. And normally, I give an example with Martin. We didn't make an offer really until Friday is when it started because they weren't really ready to engage and really start getting serious about it. So basically Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we knew that it was going to come to a head. It was going to start to move. And we knew by Sunday night this deal was going to get done, no matter where he was going to end up, but it was going to be over. So ideally, that's the way you want to do it. You don't like to put offers out there and leave them there for a while. So we'll normally put a time period on it. And if there's an offer, we want to make sure we're going to get a counter back. and we'll see where it goes. But with our own free agents, we currently don't have anything there, but that doesn't mean we didn't engage at some point and just agree that we couldn't come to terms.
Is that the situation with Melke? That have you agreed that you can't come to terms?
I mean, right now, he's expressed he's wanted to be back, and we've expressed we'd like to have him back. And the fact that he isn't signed, yeah, I would say that we just can't come to terms. And that isn't to say that we won't down the road, but like I mentioned this earlier, there's times where just because the two of us can't agree on value, because the ultimate the debate that we have is what is his market value, and the only way to know is for him to get to free agency and talk to other clubs. And it's not a salary arbitration case. It won't matter what's been done. It's who is willing to pay him what, and it's time. It's the timing of it. It's supply and demand. It's all those things. So his value is completely predicated on supply and demand in the current landscape and the current free agent market.
So you have a number in mind. You're not willing to budge off it. If he can't match that offer somewhere else, then he can come back to you at that number or something reasonably close to it. Is that what I'm reading?
No, I wouldn't exactly say that. I would say that we've talked about where he'd like to be, and we've expressed where we'd like to be. And the unfortunate part is that we both want the same thing. You know, where we think the deal should be is just we're not on the same page right now. But that's not to say that, things can't change and we can't continue to work. And, our minds might change and their minds might change. And that's probably as far as I can go on that.
This is difficult to quantify, I'm sure. But do you have any sense as to what the trade market for you might look like this winter? And I know these things tend to come pretty quickly, but you indicated that you talked to some teams that you think there might be some things out there that you can do. Do you have any level of confidence, or what would your level of confidence be, that there are deals out there absent free agency through trade?
There's definitely some things we've tried to get done from a trade standpoint. We just haven't been able to get those deals done. So I'm not very confident right now. I'd say all trade talks are probably more exploratory at this point. I don't think we're close. We know who's available. But there's a few players we'd love to get. For example, one player we're fine with parting with, and the second player we need to add, that's the hang-up. And now you're looking for, okay, I'll do the one. Can I replace that player with somebody else? You can't agree there, and then the conversation goes, well, can I get some other player on some other team to facilitate that and do a two-for-one? I mean, those are some of the stumbling blocks and some of the roadblocks you have when you're trying to get a deal done. So there's plenty of players that we'd love to add. It would be a great fit, but we just seem to hit a roadblock in some of those areas because, we're not prepared to do what it'll take in terms of to give up the players that teams have asked for right now.
Kind of sounds like your Florida negotiations a couple of years ago. It started as, kind of a one-for-one and wound up as a nine-player deal.
Yeah, you know what? It's not really that. It's more of we have a few players with specific teams that we're trying to get. Not big deals. It's just, for the most part, rarely do you do one-for-one deals. They're normally two-for-one or two-for-two, things like that. Sometimes you can agree on the first player, but clearly we're trying to get someone who's better than the one, so we need to add a little bit more. You need to add some people call it a sweetener, I guess, and the sweetener is really sweet for what the team wants and what we're willing to give, so we'll just continue to try to work, but I don't think we're close to anything. We'll just continue to work at it and see if we can get some things done.
Double A, thanks a lot, as always. We appreciate your time, and
okay.
All the best. We'll talk again.
All right, guys, really enjoyed it.
Alex Anthopoulos, Managing General of the Toronto Blue Jays. Before we break, general thoughts.
I like how you and Alex talk in code to each other. Like, you're saying one thing, he's saying one thing. I think you both want to say something else, but, you know that you can't. Well, he knows that he can't tell you everything. He obviously can't.
Well, no, and I understand he can't say it. So it's this cat and mouse thing. I'm trying to get him to say something without saying it.
It's very enjoyable watching it from this close, I must say.
Well, I don't know what we learned. The one thing we did learn is he doesn't feel a need to get either a second or third baseman. He said that quite bluntly.
And we also learned,
which doesn't mean he won't, but and maybe he's just protecting his butt because he doesn't think he can make a deal for a second or third baseman, and therefore he can't say, "Well, I'm not going to be comfortable."
And there are no offers out there right now, despite the fact that yesterday there were reports that the Blue Jays would make Pablo Sandoval an offer within 24 hours for those 24
yeah,
hours
to be up. Yeah, that's a story, you know.
Yeah, well,
I don't know how much validity it had.
Well,
apparently none.
Well, we learned that, yeah, that's what we learned.
Yeah. The other one is with Melky. The other thing I think we learned here is that he doesn't have any level of confidence that Melky's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
That the gap at this point is too wide. And that if Melky Cabrera, what I read into it is if Melky Cabrera is playing left field for the Toronto Blue Jays next year, it's because Melky Cabrera didn't get the offer he thinks
he's
going to get from somebody else.
Correct. So what does Melky think he's going to get?
Exact number?
Hmm.
I have no way of knowing
that.
You know, are they talking about term or are they talking about actual dollars? And my guess is probably at this point, both.
Both, yeah.
So Melky wants a year or two more than Alex wants to give him.
Mm-hmm.
And Melky wants an average annual salary that's more than Alex wants to pay him.
Right. So it doesn't add up.
Now, is that...
At least not yet.
You know, are we talking about $13 million versus $15 million a year? Are we talking about $10 million versus $13 million? I don't know. Are we talking 3 years offer? He wants five? You know.
Don't know.
He ain't going to tell us.
No.
But what he did tell us is, right now, don't plan on Melky Cabrera being the left fielder for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Prognosis negative.
Because he doesn't.
No.
He doesn't think that's going to happen.
I see why, like you said the other day off air, man, I love to talk in baseball. You so see, like, it's endless. The possibilities where you can go with this. It's going to be a fascinating offseason. It already has been.
A team sport played by a bunch of individuals. That's what makes it unique. Who else you have doesn't necessarily matter. Take a look at the 9 individual athletes that you have on the field in any given day. Mm-hmm. Their ability to work with each other, like a hockey team, a football team, a basketball team, is virtually irrelevant.
Just the odd 6-4-3 double play. That's about it.
And you can do that when you're in Little League. When we come back, Monday Night Football and snow in Buffalo, what are they going to do? We'll talk about it with Don Banks of Sports Illustrated when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Now, Primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Before the hour, we got things to do here. We have perilously little time.
Mm-hmm.
That's because you're so chatty.
This is such nice, you know, summertime, warm weather music, and we're going to talk.
You're very
Buffalo.
Focused on the music on this show, aren't you?
I like my tunes, man. We've had Nazareth today. We've had Bob Marley. It's been a good day. We have Sammy Hagar for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Don Banks of Sports Illustrated is with us. Are you working tonight? Or are you taking the night off? I'd take the night off if I were you.
Well, I do have to go to the gym because I haven't been all week.
Attaboy.
And then I have to come home and watch the game and,
oh, you know, really?
And prepare in case anything happens. But I don't have to write anything off this game, no.
Oh, good. Because I can't even imagine what you'd write. I mean, is this down there with the worst Thursday nighters. And that's saying something, don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, it definitely is. But, you know, there is a certain rubbernecking that takes place once a team gets this, you know, this territory at 0-10. I mean, they are going for a slice of history, and I actually believe it's a very tricky little game for the Chiefs, because playing the Super Bowl defending champion at home last week, you beat them, short week, travel, looking ahead perhaps to the other Super Bowl team from last year, Denver, which you have at home for what could be the division
lead next week. So this is the ultimate trap game. And when a team is 0-10, you got to figure they're going to find a bone or two eventually.
Did Kansas City even practice this week? Did they even feel the need?
You're thinking of Buffalo. You're thinking of Buffalo.
No, I know they did. Well, they practiced inside. But, I mean, Kansas City, they just say, we don't.
2 days.
You know what, coach? We don't. It's Oakland. For God's sakes. You know, we're going to play video games. We don't need to practice, do we?
Well, the record is truly awful, and they deserve it. But they have given a few teams, the Chargers mainly, New England real early in the year, a good game. I mean, the Chargers have beaten them twice narrowly, including last Sunday. So I think they're going 0-16. I look at the schedule, and I think they're going to get it done. But this is a winnable game. It's home. It's a short week. And it's a division foe who they at least arguably should know.
Don, you don't sound psyched up about this game. But
who is?
I'm reading what you wrote about Matt Schaub, so it could be
worse. Oh, that's
worse.
A great story.
Can you enlighten us? This is beautiful.
Because I was very proud of that today.
That's a great
story. Okay, here we go. You ready? The pathetic Raiders have now gone a full calendar year since their most recent win, but that's nothing compared to Matt Schaub's plight. Oakland's backup quarterback was on a Houston team that lost its final 14 games of 2013, then got traded to the Raiders, who have proceeded to go 0-10 with him on the roster. That's a mind-boggling 24-game losing streak. That's fantastic.
And the best part, I thought, was last year, in the most recent game that Oakland has won, in week 11 of last year, Schaub played for the Texans through 25 passes in that loss.
Yeah.
He switches sides, and the visiting team wins again when the Texans, without him, come to Oakland in week two this year, a game he did not play in, but the karma loomed over the game, and he lost on both ends of that series, and the visiting team won. So I don't know. That's tough to beat. 0-24. As I dubbed it, the curse of Matt Schaub.
There you go. Yes, you want to trademark that.
That is epic.
Wow.
All right, let's forget this game because we spent 4 minutes on it. It wasn't worth one.
No.
There's a snowstorm in Buffalo, and I was going to say there was a snowstorm, but it's still going on.
There's another one.
It's sort of the same one, but there's more snow coming anyway. So right. They're going to have like, I don't know, 200-300 feet of snow in Buffalo by the time this is open. The I-90 is scheduled to reopen in August. They think that's how long it'll take to clear the snow from the interstate. They're not going to play on Sunday, but what are you hearing? Are they going to try for Monday? Are they going to move the game? What do you think? What do you know?
They're definitely moving the game.
Okay.
They've already announced that. It's going to be relocated. And the two places, I thought Toronto was actually the no-brainer, but apparently that has been ruled out. We've heard Detroit. I don't know if that's just a tip of the hat to the Ralph Wilson family, who was all from there, and they have a dome, and we've heard Washington. And they're not sure if it's going to be Monday or if it's going to be Tuesday, but it's going to be one of those. And you remember about 4 years ago, snowstorm hit Philadelphia, and they moved that game to, I think it was Vikings at Eagles. I thought they overreacted, but they moved that game to Tuesday night. And I think that could be the blueprint here if they don't want to have a couple Monday night games, although I don't think they're afraid of that.
I think they should play in the snow. I think they should play at the
Ralph.
It would be so much fun.
You can't get there. It's not about playing there.
I don't care if people get there.
Ban. That's why they haven't practiced. The players can't get to the facility because there's a ban on driving in the Buffalo area.
Patrick Coletta couldn't get to the Sabres game the other night, so I guess it makes sense.
Well, one guy. Not the end of the world.
Well, they could just play in a parking lot.
Sabres game
snow
tonight.
Anyway.
They cancel the Sabres game tonight? I think. Yeah.
They
did. So, well, it's a mess. Now they were offering free tickets and $10 an hour if you come and shovel snow at the stadium.
Right.
I'm wondering whether nobody called.
That's enough of an enticement. That's,
I was going to say.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, maybe everybody went, nah, not doing that. Like they had this.
I wonder if this. I'm being semi-serious, but I wonder if this is going to help Doug Marrone keep his job. I mean, let's be honest.
Okay, explain.
I think they're already dead.
But agreed.
If this thing becomes, we didn't practice, we lost this game, they go into a tailspin, the area was hit with this devastating winter storm. I just wonder if somehow, some way, this is going to kind of take the attention off the fact that these people are working for and coaching for their jobs this year.
That's interesting.
Not a bad theory, actually. Yeah, you know, we couldn't get back on the map after that storm. We couldn't get together. That actually could work.
I mean, you've kind of seen when things hit like this, sometimes it does kind of take the focus off the bottom line. And then this is a major, major devastating storm in that area. I don't know how long it's going to take to dig out, but it's going to take a long time. And a lot of things are going to be down for a long time.
We haven't had a chance to talk since, or have we? Have we talked since New England pasted Indianapolis? No.
No.
How, if at all, does it change your opinion of the New England Patriots? Which, in my opinion, has been was changed, I think, in week five. We're back to normal. But I didn't really expect them to be this good.
Yeah, my opinion changed when they beat Denver a few weeks back. I thought, okay, that's the number one seed in the AFC. I don't see them blowing that. I really don't. And I thought what they did against Indianapolis just underlined how much they have going. And when they get a Jonas Gray, who we didn't even know, who can run for 201 yards and four touchdowns, it really doesn't matter who they plug in back there. And Brady's playing at a great level. To me, I've said this before, when Gronk was Gronk again, that's when this thing took off. And Denver's struggling. I think New England's going to win the top seed.
Yeah, but they did it. They scored 42 points? And Brady, by his standards, it was an off night. He wasn't great.
It was a running game night.
It was a running game night.
And they, that is... to their credit, they come up with different ways to beat you, and you never know exactly how they're going to game plan you. But the Colts didn't see it coming.
Packers on the other side over in the NFC, are they the mirror image?
Pretty much. I was at that game, and it was over. It was over before I looked up. And, you know, that is a team that is just – it is playing video game football right now with Aaron Rodgers. He's playing at a level nobody else is coming close to touching. If you really start looking at the numbers of what he's doing. But the 50-point outings the last 2 weeks, my only question is, could they keep this going another 2 months to get to mid-January when it really matters? But I think they're going to win that division, and I think they've got a shot, if Arizona stumbles, of being there in the home field advantage race.
And, you got the Packers in New England a week from Sunday, right? That's a pretty sweet matchup.
Weekend.
Yike.
Is in Foxborough.
So you're going to the gym? Is that the plan here?
I am.
Okay.
A little exercise. Watch some of the game. Come home. Watch the rest of it.
You stop off at the drive-thru, grab a cheeseburger on the way home? Mitigate the impact
I would, but the wife won't allow that.
Really?
Yeah. Mm.
You might want to have the talk, you know what I mean?
Okay. I will...
Tyler Bob says, let me have a cheeseburger on
Monday. I was going to say, I don't know what the talk means, but whatever.
I might as well stay home if I'm going to have a cheeseburger coming home from the gym, don't you think?
Well, no,
I wasted my time.
No. Take 5 pounds off, put 5 pounds back on. It's a tie. It's not all bad.
You just stay on the couch that way.
Yeah, but then you get no cheeseburger.
Then you just put them five on.
What's the matter with you?
That's true.
Thank you, Mr. Banks.
Brilliant.
See you next week. Don Banks of Sports Illustrated.
Did you see the new cheeseburger? It's at Harvey's. The cheese is in the meat.
Oh, it's in the meat?
Yeah.
I've done that before. It's
you
not
have?
Like the nuclear science.
I thought it was a new invention.
Well, if you have if you make the burgers on the barbecue, and you make them yourself, like you don't buy the pre-made, you go and buy a whack of a couple of kilos of ground beef.
Right.
Well, then you make a thin burger and then another thin burger, and then you take this cheese and you put it between the two burgers.
No, but this one, the cheese is in it.
I know, that's what I'm saying. You take the two halves, put it together,
cheating.
And then the cheese is inside.
No, this is like the caramel bar.
No, that's exactly how they make it.
No,
the same way.
You have no idea how they make that.
What do you think? They take a syringe and insert liquid cheese in the middle of the burger?
It's one of my theories.
Is this how all people think in Nova Scotia?
That's why we are where we're at. Or where we're at, where we're going. Where you at, where you're to.
Are you back again tomorrow?
I think so.
Oh, God. I feel a cold coming on. Good night from Toronto.